when you understand that scientifically and historically, as an animal species, we are actually hardwired to want to pattern interrupt. They're not quite sure as to whether it is need for survival, but even as an animal species, I mean, animals are attracted to all kinds of drugs, right? There's that famous video with the dolphins and the fish and the dolphins are literally getting high.
We're live. What's up, everyone? Welcome to the podcast where we dive in on relationships, love, lust, dating, science, philosophy, psychology, and so much more. We're also on iTunes, so hit us up there, leave us a review. If you're watching here on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, hit that bell button so you can get automatic updates. You won't ever have to search for another episode again. We're not going to be doing any advertising on this show, so the only fee is to tell a friend. Tell a friend about the show. Let them know what is going on. We give useful advice and tools on this show. So definitely stay up to date with that. But I have an awesome guest here today. I've been waiting for a long time to get her on the show because she's done a lot for me. And we've met on amazing terms. And we've continued this relationship all throughout. And it's just been an awesome experience to get to know her. She's got so much to bring to the table. Ivy, thank you so much for coming on today's show. We're going to do a nice, a better introduction, so we're going to continue on with that. But tell us a little bit about like how this, like what your journey looks like right now, and what it, and then we'll get into, you know, what it didn't look like before all this.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Rob, for having me. Rob, you and I had met at a self-development program. And I mean, I wanted to connect with you right away when you said that you were focusing on divorced dads, because basically I am married to a divorced dad. So right away I wanted to see what your work was about, and I was very interested in that. And yeah, basically both my husband and I, we've been together now for 11 years. We met online, even though he likes to still tell the story that we met in communion at church or something like that. Yeah. But I think now it's more acceptable that we met, we did meet online, and we're both, it's a blended family, so we both have kids from previous relationships. At the time, my daughter was 14, and he had an 11 and a 9-year-old, and the 9-year-old is special needs. So I have, we both come from divorced backgrounds, we're a blended family. It turns out that both of our ex-spouses are not active in our children's lives. So I hate to use the word deadbeat, but most people can relate to what that is. But they're not active. So we have a lot of sort of stresses in our lives, and we're still managing and thriving and learning from that. I really consider my husband some kind of stoic enlightened warrior. When you give birth to a disabled child, it is very much like an awakening. Your whole life and all of your priorities shift, and you really start to perceive life very differently. And that happened to him when he was barely 27, I think. So, so you can imagine what kind of awakening that could give somebody. It could go either way. But he's a dedicated father, and yeah, we're just continuing to thrive and deal with the daily stresses that you can imagine.
For sure. I want to stop you there because I just want to, you know, obviously commend that archetype, because it's rarely seen. I've never seen an archetype like that, and how you guys have come together and managed to keep it so close and so tight-knit, and it's beautiful to see that. So I just wanted to say that. And so you said that he had two kids, one with special needs at 9, another kid at 11. You had two?
My daughter was 14, and now my daughter was 14.
Oh, right, 14. Yeah. 14 at the time, okay.
And together now, we have our daughter is now 9. So together we have a 9-year-old. So we have a his, hers, and ours.
Right. Wow. That's okay. So I'm just trying to keep a mental note of all that. And so, when you guys were, I guess, okay. So let's go back to your marriage. When did you decide that it was gonna break, that the divorce actually was a better route for you at the time? So let's talk about that actually. Like, when did you did you initiate the divorce, or how did that happen?
Well, my relationship prior to him, so I had my daughter when I was very young. I was 22 years old. So basically that relationship never did turn out, and he never was involved in her life. I was married for a short period of time, for 2 years. And I think at that time it was a marriage where I wanted to try to fit into the social norms. I had been a single mother for 6 years already, and it was at the age where my daughter was saying, "Who's my father? I want a daddy." And I met a person who was seemingly dedicated to having a family life. And so I got married to him, and he ended up having some severe anger issues. So within 6 months, I knew right away that I couldn't live the rest of my life with this, and I couldn't subject my daughter. So I had divorced him within 2 years. So fast forward, by the time my daughter was 12, I was ready to get involved in another relationship. Obviously you date and all of that stuff. And I finally moved in with somebody. I had been with him for 2 years, and we finally made the decision to move in together. And within 3 months, I found out he was cheating on me. So once again, I was faced with yet another failed relationship. And that, even though I thought I could try to forgive him, it didn't end up working out, and we ended up separating. And I went deep into meditation. A girlfriend pulled me aside, and she looked at me straight in the face and said, "Ivy, you need to take a look at yourself and understand why you keep attracting men like this, or why these patterns are happening in your life." So I thought, you know what, meditation can help me with that. I did dabble into meditation before, and from having that meditation practice, I got the blindsided with the huge side effect of self-love. I realized that even though I appeared very confident, you know, I had my stuff together. I was very well, you know, financially, I had decent work all the time. I was making do being a single mom, but deep down inside, that was all a facade. It was my self-esteem was shot, and this is why I was attracting these type of relationships. So when I did the meditation practice, it did not take me long. It was like quantum speed almost, where I felt this enormous self-love for myself. And I got back up and I said, you know what? I'm not letting this schmuck take over my life. Like, people said, you know, be single, Ivy, stay out of relationships, work on yourself. And I said, you know what? I've done it. It's been 6 weeks. I feel so good about myself. And I went back online and I started dating and having the time of my life. And I felt so much love and joy and peace for myself. And obviously the work continues. Self-forgiveness is ongoing. And 6 weeks later, I met my husband. It was that,
wow.
It was that quick. And I did the whole, you know, kind of the metaphysics stuff with, you know, really affirming what I wanted out of a relationship. What I even wanted him to look like, which I think is kind of a little bit superficial, but I really also put down the values. I said to myself, I want somebody who values family first and foremost, mm-hmm. who is committed to me and building something with me. Those were probably the top two values that I kept on the forefront. But on top of that, I just was also committed to having fun and allowing myself to feel joy again, despite the horrible failures that I could have easily, I was really on the brink, either depression or not depression. So I completely flipped it with meditation, and I chose joy and happiness and love, and didn't even really care about the outcome. So I really wasn't expecting to meet somebody. I was having a great time dating online. I didn't need to find myself in this heavy duty relationship anymore. But we met and we completely connected. At that time, he was 39 and I was 37, so we were mature. And he kind of knew right away too. He had started dating online as well. And he knew too that that connection was special that we had. And we basically took our profiles off right away. About 3 months later, he said to me if he were about to take the next step in our relationship, and that was to meet his kids. And that's when I found out that he had a disabled child. He did tell me before. And he used to tell me too that I don't tell people. He had stopped telling women that he was dating that he had a disabled child, because they would exit the relationship.
So, yeah, there's definitely a couple dynamics. No, it's not heavy at all. I mean, there's a lot of, for me, obviously, because I just hear so much of these stories and stuff like that. It's not to discredit or devalue any of your stories. I think it's great and it's beautiful. There's so many dynamics I actually want to kind of touch upon there. And so for just a moment, there's obviously a revelation in terms of when you were attracting the same partners, because you were maybe looking out of necessity or outside of yourself, and then boom, you started meditating, and then you started realizing, okay, self-love is where I need to be at, because if I'm not good alone and happy alone, then I'll stop looking for other partners for these types of things, and then this person who's going to now come into my life is going to be just a beautiful compliment as opposed to somebody who I'm going to be enmeshed with. What I just explained there is probably a little bit about how codependency kind of looks like to people when you don't know what's going on. And that's what kind of codependency looks for. We look for partners who can kind of fit the bill, and when they don't fit the bill, then we got kind of X them out, and then we attract partners who are also not capable of loving themselves as well, and so they look outside and they cheat and do all sorts of things. And so when you talk about like meditation and how that helped you, what was the most important thing when you were kind of transitioning from that stage in and out and realizing, because you said self-love was a side effect, like how did that like look like in between the start and when you meditate and basically had that revelation? Like, what is it that you're really specifically diving into in your mind?
Well, this is the beauty about meditation. You can't really, it doesn't even work for everybody, but there's a huge, so much more research saying that it is hugely effective. So it is worth a shot. And it's worth a shot over the long term, because it's like exercise, right? You're not going to build muscles and get the body you want within a few workouts. Then that's the key with meditation, is that you don't necessarily get the instant gratification from it. It's a constant practice. When I started meditating, I just wanted to forget. I wanted to clear my mind. There was nothing else. That was my primary goal. Like, let me just clear my mind and not be depressed. And then I got hit with, the self-love just grew and grew and grew. And it was self-love in that, you know what, I'm honoring the truth of who I am now. People were telling me not to be in a relationship, and they meant very well by that, right? I was a single mom. I wasn't going to expose my daughter to another relationship. But I also said to myself, you know what, but I want a relationship. I love being in a relationship. I love having a partner. So why would I deny myself that because of an external circumstance? That's the truth.
So it was like going in, figuring out what your limiting beliefs were, eradicating them, and then telling yourself a new truth, like a new truth, or actually not telling yourself a new truth, but actually uncovering what the real truth was. Because, you know, just going back, you said that the marriage was kind of out of like social norms, right? It happened out of social norms. And so you had to actually go back and redo that, I guess, limiting belief, saying that I need to be in a relationship that's adaptable to social norms. And then saying, no, I don't. I can actually look for a partner who's actually right for me, not what society tells me. And so that was kind of like a limiting belief, would you say? And then another one would be, you know, I'm a single mom. I can't have a relationship. worthy enough of marriage because I'm a single mom. Did you ever have those thoughts or?
Oh, absolutely. I think when you're single and you're dating, you never feel quite good enough. And I think even being, Robin, this is going to open up another topic, but you don't have to touch upon it. But I mean, even being an ethnic woman, it's almost like having two strikes against you. And especially when you don't date other ethnic men. You're ethnic and you have a single, you know, how do you compete with the blonde haired, blue-eyed women out there that don't have kids? You know, like, it's like, these are the type of things that maybe someone who's not of color won't ever think this, but these are the kind of, like, this is just the truth. These are the thoughts that go through my head. You know, how do I compete with somebody who doesn't have kids and can get up and go whenever they want? How is someone going to love me when I have these physical limitations? And they're real limitations, right? I can't go to the bar. I can't go traveling whenever I want to. I have to find a babysitter. And there's also financial responsibilities that I have that single women don't, right, without kids. So absolutely, it is. And it's just, it does. What does that do to your self-esteem? It makes you feel like you're not good enough. So how are you going to ever attract anybody if you yourself don't feel like you're good enough?
No, absolutely. And another thing I just want to add there too is that, you know, despite whatever, I guess, limitations that you have, whatever limitations that people may think that they have, there is a certain flavor for everybody. I mean, there are guys out there who are looking for single moms. You know, you never know. That's probably his flavor of women that he likes, whether they're ethnic or not. And I think nowadays, especially growing up in Canada, I've noticed there's a lot of like interracial couples. There's a lot of people dating outside of their race, I've noticed. Maybe not so much back in like the 80s and 90s.
10 years ago, yeah.
But for now, I think now I'm seeing a lot more acceptance of that. And I think people in general are starting to become really popular in terms of, I think I was reading, not Asian men. Asian men have been on the low of like, in terms of
desirability factor, right?
Desirability, yeah, that's what it is. And then Asian women have been on the highest, actually, because, and this is what like Tinder has been saying, or Match.com or whatever, based on the swipes, people who are swiping on certain things. So like I said, regardless, I mean, I think what we're trying to get here and what Ivy's trying to get at is that, like, whatever like limiting belief that you have, I think you have to kind of destroy it in your mind in order for it to become reality in your own life.
It is. It's just a self, whether it's from societal expectations or for what you see in the media or what you grew up with, what your parents told you, it's all just letting there is somebody for everyone. What's that saying? There's somebody for everyone.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you want to approach it from a place of truth. And that sounds so cliche, but we're just so inundated with other people's truth and other people's expectations that you have to really know where you're coming from. And the only way to get that is to take a deep dive into the nothingness. For me, it was the nothingness of meditation. It's like, it's like clearing the slate. It's like having a blank canvas.
But what's crazy about meditation, and this is how it worked for me as well too, and I think I find it super fascinating. I don't know why I've never discovered meditation earlier in my life before. I guess I just wasn't able to sit still for so long. But what the revelation that I got from meditation was that I was creating new patterns with it. Like while I was sitting in that nothingness, I was kind of erasing some of the old patterns and unlearning some of the conditioning that was put onto me for so long. And then I guess just sitting in that nothingness to recreate and rewire like, I guess, new cycles and new patterns and new behaviors for myself or what I envision my life to look like. And I think that's just an important thing. I think, and this is not woo-woo stuff. This, like, I think there's like scientific explanation.
There is, it's actually.
In regards to like neuroplasticity, right? And how we can reform neurons and just new neural pathways in our brains, and I find that really, really interesting. So
yeah, it's shutting down the prefrontal cortex, and this is a lot of the training that I've been doing as of late with the Flow Genome Project. And they really get into the neuroscience of certain states. One of it is in meditation, one of it is in say extreme sports, or even sort of putting your body in a position of extreme challenge, or even being out in nature where you have to be completely present to where you are, that your prefrontal cortex, the monkey mind, that chatter turns off. And in that moment, you're able to see other parts of your brain fire up, so that you're able to see things that you weren't able to see because this thing was not shutting off before. So that is what I was saying.
I wasn't going to get in. I didn't think we were going to get into that so soon, but since we're on it, let's actually talk about this flow state, because, and we'll come back to the relationship stuff, because I actually find this really, really interesting. And we were talking a little bit about this off camera, but now that we're in it right now, let's just dive right into it. So flow state, explain what flow state is, and then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the things that you've learned for like high performance and what experts are doing in that kind of state. So you talked a little bit about the different types of state. What's flow state in terms of like how it's being explained right now?
Okay, so typically when I ask people, what do you think of flow? And they'll think of martial arts, or they'll think of yoga flow or meditation flow, and it's that kind of balancing out and that smooth sailing. But flow, from a scientific term, is a state of mind where you experience a few things, and one of it is selflessness. So you no longer feel a sense of self, and this is what I was saying with meditation, shutting down that prefrontal cortex, and even you were able to rewire yourself because you were able to shut down certain things, and in that moment you're able to connect other patterns that you weren't able to do so before. So you're really losing your sense of self, and people are afraid of that. People think, oh my God, I don't want to lose who I am, because I like who I am. I think I like who I am, which is fine, but it's actually a really great feeling to not have to, it's kind of like something falls off your shoulders in that moment. And then also timelessness. So were you ever in a deep, amazing conversation with a friend, all of a sudden you look at the time, you're like, holy shit, did we just pass by 2 hours? Right? Because that is flow. Right there is flow. You felt that sense of timelessness. You could talk to this person forever. Right? Another thing is richness. Everything in that moment feels so rich. Feels three, almost, you know, 4K. Now it's not even 3D HD anymore, right? It's 4K. Yeah. Everything is so rich and bright. And effortlessness is the next one. So S-T-E-R. Selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness. You're in that moment. A lot of people call it, a lot of runners experience this with runner's high. A lot of athletes call it being in the zone. All of a sudden, it's effortlessness. Whatever you're doing seems so easy for you. And sometimes it's only a matter of minutes. Like, I'm sure because you dive deep into deep meditative state.
For sure, when you talk about athletes and how they get in, and they talk about flow state, I remember, like, I follow basketball, and a lot of the athletes, the way that they explain it as they get better in the game, they say that the game slows down for them. And I played hockey my whole adolescent to teenage years. I mean, obviously when I first started out in hockey when I was 8-9 years old, the game was very hard. It was not easy for me to conceive it in my mind. But as soon as I hit 13, 14, 15, 16, I was able to process the game a lot slower. And when I was in these flow states, I can actually picture myself scoring on the net in the fashion that before it actually happening, which is actually unreal. And I'm sure, you know, why visualization is so important for athletes is because of when you're in flow state, you can achieve something, like you said, where it becomes super rich, it becomes super clear. And that's kind of like how I explain it as an athlete. Like, when I think about when the game slowed down for me and the way that I saw it, it's like hitting, it's like if you're a baseball player too, sometimes when you hit the ball off the sweet spot of the bat, you can
like see you can the almost ball.
Yeah, like slowing down as if it's hitting the bat, and just so I actually like to explain that as a kind of like a flow state for athletes.
It is. That's exactly what it is. And that's the thing. And when I discovered flow state, I was actually kind of disappointed because I realized that I wasn't getting enough of it in my life anymore, right? Like you, I played a lot of sports growing up. And I mean, we would be playing tennis and we wouldn't even know what time it was until the lights, the tennis lights came on. And we're like, holy crap, these lights come on at 10:30. Right? Like it was just all day long hitting that ball, being in the zone. And that was like, I mean, I don't have time for that anymore. Maybe you have to calendar that in. One day I'm just going to find a tennis partner and we're going to play tennis till the street light comes on. Right? Like, like that, that's awesome. Like that's exactly what it is. And that's in those moments is when you can interrupt old patterns and rewire for new, more positive ones or high performing ones.
So let's try to see if we can relate this back to relationships a little bit. And so like let's say somebody who let's say like a mom right now who, you know, finds out she got cheated on and then now she realizes she has to go through a divorce or something like that. And basically what we're trying to say here is like let's try to get in this flow state in terms of like
So what I always say, and I've
encountered to somebody like that.
I've encountered this in a couple of those self-development workshops. I mean, a lot of people enter the self-development workshops oftentimes when they're in this state, when they're in a state of huge transition, when they're in a state of trauma. And because I've already kind of walked that path, I turn to them and I say, girl, this is your time. Like, this is it. Like, this guy, you have no idea, but this guy did you a biggest favor. The only choice you need to make is whether or not you want to sit in your sorrow or find some joy. Those are the only two decisions you need to make right now. So it is tough to tell somebody to get over it. Essentially, that's what I'm saying. But I just say, you know what, hurry up and do what you need to do to get over this, because when you come out on the other side, it's so much brighter and lighter. And
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Like I'm not diminishing what happened to that person because I know what it did to me. I mean, I didn't eat for 3 days. I dropped like 5 pounds in 3 days. It's really traumatic. It's sickening. Like it can make you sick, but I've been up on the other side. So it's like, you know what, do what you need to do to get over it. And people will have different ways of getting over things, but just hurry up with that grieving process. You know, grieve deeply and get over it. Like, it's so much better.
No, for sure, life's too short. I mean, what you're saying is you saw a barrier and you're like, this is the barrier. And whatever you do, you gotta get over this barrier because otherwise, you're not going to be able to get to the other side, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty rock bottom when someone does that to you, right? I mean, sometimes, for me, the red flags were always there. Like, I kind of knew, I knew of the person that he was cheating with me on. But, I mean, he was also very, the whole thing was very manipulative. Like, it was almost something like out of a TV show. Like, he was really living a double life. Who has time for that, right? Like, but... yeah, it was so I was really blindsided by this. Some people aren't, they kind of suspect and they, so every situation is different. But either way, when you find out, it is pretty earth-shattering and it's a big blow to your ego, right? So I'm not going to diminish the fact that something like that is pretty devastating to somebody, but it is also a great opportunity.
Sure. But it is a barrier. And, you know, I guess what you're saying is like the quicker that you realize that it is a barrier, the better, because it's going to help you get over that and not stay in the sorrow. Like you said, I love what you said there. You have a choice of either staying in the sorrow or you can push forward. And yeah, who wants to sit in that? I mean, I don't. I certainly don't. But it is hard for some people to get out there. So, I'm glad that you made it on the other side. Life is happier for you now. I just want to touch upon your dating experience with your then, your now husband, but with the dating experience, because that's kind of where we left off. But he mentioned how he didn't want to tell people that he had a disabled child. And also, my question to you, so when do you think it's appropriate for either side, like a single mom or a single dad, like when do you think that conversation should be happening? Like if you guys are on the apps together, you're swiping, you're going out on dates, maybe you've met up once or twice, three times, like when is that conversation for you, when do you think that should be happening?
I'm a big believer in just having fun and not getting into, obviously that maybe the first two dates, but then again, it's just also going with the flow. It's having that, if the conversation or if the moment warrants some deeper conversation, then why not talk about it? It's going to come out anyways, but at the same time, it doesn't need to be like, you just sat down for dinner and said, okay, so what do you want? What are your expectations for the next?
Yeah.
It's really just being in.
Sorry? It's funny you say that because I've had a situation where, people would actually say something about how I didn't mention anything until like the third date. And my thing is always like, well, you have to deem yourself, I have to deem you worthy enough for me to even tell you this information. Like this is some pretty vulnerable information. Some people take those information and use it against you. And that's just my thing. I'm meeting these women off the internet and they want me to go and tell them right off the bat my history right off in the very first date.
But in your profile, does it say you're a father?
I don't lead with that. No, that's not something I lead with.
Oh,
because,
I see.
Firstly, I'm not in their life. It was a decision that we made 5-6 years ago that I wouldn't be in their life. Who knows about in the future, but I mean, that's not something I lead with because I'm really not actually on a day-to-day. That's not really what I am. So just going back to that, I mean, did he lead with it or did he obviously wasn't, he had mentioned something how like he would tell people and they would get all insecure about that and they would leave him. And so, like, how did that work out with you? Like, what did he say, and how did he kind of break the ice with you in terms of that?
Well, even for me as dating, I ended up having to just at least mention the fact that I was a mom, because some people, especially in the online world, I've had people come out to me straight, even before the first date, we had some connection over the phone or something. So I had a protocol with online. Like I always had to get them on the phone and see if we could at least have a conversation before bothering to meet them in person. So even
yeah,
after,
that's a good tip too.
So if you're pulling teeth on the phone.
Yeah. Do the pre-vetting on the phone. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, you have to be able to at least converse or else on the phone. If you can't do that, it's going to be harder and personal. I don't know. Some people can't talk on the phone. But I needed to at least be able to have a banter, right, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell them after even a couple of conversations, whatever, it's funny, it's fun, it's light. Maybe the second conversation, by the way, I'm a mother. And some guys, and I appreciate that, they straight up say, I don't want the responsibility. This is not going to go anywhere. Like, I don't even want to play around, right, with a mom. That's good. So I'm sure it was the same for him, and let alone the fact that he had a disabled child. Some people just don't want to deal with it, and that's okay. It's better that you know ahead of time. So for me, it was always, and I don't know, again, if maybe because you don't have your kids often, that you don't necessarily need to, say that you're a father first thing. But I think it's important. I think it's an important fact to at least have in the background somewhere, and they can decide right away.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I like I said, I have to deem them first if they're worthy of me having this kind of conversation with them, because like I said, some people, I mean, I don't even know if I'm gonna date you after the first date, so it's like, okay, what's the point of me even saying all this, right? But usually, like, second, third date, that's usually when it comes up. That's like my thing.
Yeah, and that gives you time to develop that rapport and develop that trust. If you're not even going to get to that point, because that's what I'm saying about being in the moment. What are you guys doing in that moment? That, I mean, maybe you're just having a lot of fun that it doesn't, the conversation doesn't even come up. Or maybe you have nothing else to talk about that, you know what, I might as well just tell you that I'm whatever, just stay in the moment. And I think, again, meditation helps you with that, being present and not having to worry about what's going to come up next. Just being present to that person, that conversation, that event, and whatever needs to come up will come up organically. Right? But then if you're pulling teeth to have a conversation with somebody, then it's never, why bother anyway? Yeah. Not everyone's
going to connect. That's the phone conversation. Yeah, well, that's what the phone conversation is for, right? I think that's such a, I've actually went on a few dates actually without having to actually talk on the phone prior to. We would send a voice note, I guess. I would be like, send me a voice note so I know I'm not going to get catfished and you're not some like 50-year-old dude or whatever, what have you. That's going to come and kidnap me or something like that. So we have a voice note chat, but we would never talk on the phone, actually. I don't know. Maybe things are changing. But I love I had a girl actually just call me one time out of nowhere.
I know. People don't want to talk anymore. We're going to lose the art of conversation.
It is. And you're right. People are losing that a little bit, and myself included. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's going at the pace of which society is going, and they're thinking of seeing what's right and what's not. But I'm a little bit like you. I'm kind of in the middle, but I don't mind a little bit of either or, where it's just texting and just like, hey, when are we meeting? Here's a voice note. That's it. And then purpose of texting is just to figure out when I'm going to see you next, basically. No, like, hey, what are you doing all day and texting back and forth? And, you know, like, I think that's a little bit too much, but...
Yeah, sending giffies.
Yeah.
But you can. I was saying, like, because you can't text and drive anymore, it's a lot easier to just have an excuse to pick up the phone and call somebody.
Exactly.
Like, hey, I'm driving. Let's have a quick conversation. That's kind of nice, and it's kind of nice to try to bring back real conversation again, right?
For sure. I have this thing going on with like my friends who, whenever we're driving, we'll be like, hey, let's be car buddies together. Like, we'll just, when we're both driving, let's just have a conversation on the phone as opposed to just sitting there and texting and not doing anything. But yes, I love that. Okay, so this is awesome. So you guys were, we've given a lot of perspective here, even for single moms, even for like, you know, divorced fathers listening in who are, basically going to have to think about dating and what that's going to look like and what those conversations are going to, you know, be centered around. So yeah, I would suggest, like, you know, have fun, like Ivy said, but also be present. Don't have to think so far into the future. I think it's better to just have fun and remain and build a relationship off of the fun and then talk about it if it comes up, right? And then go from there.
But I think people just have all these expectations. Like, how about just having just have some fun at the moment. Don't worry about the expectations. Yeah. It'll come. It has to come. But for now, when you're dating, just keep it fun, right? Even women, too. Yeah. Women are probably have heavier expectations than men, unfortunately. I don't know if I'm right in this new day and age, but I think that conversations about, oh, this and that, and he did this, and I'm like, what? You guys, just, even if it doesn't get past the third date, did you have fun on your last three dates? Like, that was worth your time, right? That was worth your time. Just have some fun, and then let it go. If it doesn't work out, let it go, but at least you had fun, and it wasn't a waste of your time.
I think that dynamic shows up in a lot with men as well, too. So it's not just women, but yeah, it does come up a lot. But I want to transition a little bit into what it looks like what it looked like afterwards. So you guys were dating, you guys were in a relationship. Obviously, when the blending of the families came together, did you guys have a conversation of what that would look like? So you guys have pretty gotten serious, you know, and then now it's like, what are we like how is this going to look in our day-to-day life? Because you had your routine with your your daughter, and then he had his routines with his, and then how did that all look like, or what was the conversation behind that?
I think for my side, it was a little bit more difficult because my daughter was already 14. She was a teenager. She was coming into her own, the rebelliousness of being a teenager. So age of the child plays a huge factor in the child's development and the child's maturity. So you really have to, and I don't have, I can say that I probably had to push my daughter a little bit because she was 14. She was a little bit independent, but still very much dependent on me and my schedule and what I wanted to do on the weekends, right? So it was like, you know what, we're going to spend time with David and his daughter, who was 11 at the time. And there was some pushback there. But, you know, she also didn't have a choice. In the end, it worked out wonderfully because as the age got close, you know, when Jessica, the younger one, was 14 and my daughter was 16 or 17, they became really close. So now they're sisters. They're not half sisters. They're not stepsisters. They're sisters. And they met each other when one was 14 and one was 11. So there was a little bit of resistance from my 14-year-old that would occur with any teenager. I think the younger that you have the children, the more open-hearted, I mean, the younger the kids are, the more open-hearted they are, so it is a little bit easier. And children are so resilient. That's one thing I discovered, even with as a single parent. We worry so much about if we're gonna traumatize our kids and that we should be the perfect parent. And there's all these parenting courses now for conscious parenting and all of this stuff, but in the end, I mean, I had a pretty rough childhood and I'm still working on it. And I still think I turned out okay. My child did not have as much challenges as I did, even though she grew up without a father. She still had a very loving, supportive environment. She'll find her way. She's 25 now, right? She's found her way for the most part, as humanly possible. But children are very resilient. And I think you're lucky if you can get them before the age of 13. If you can get a blended family together. It is a lot easier, to be perfectly honest and frank. I mean, teenagers are an exceptional challenge even when you're in a happy marriage and a happy family dynamic. So when you're going through a divorce parent and you have teenagers or older kids, it is going to be challenging. So that's just something to expect and watch out for, and don't necessarily be hard on yourself because you're teenage kids not jiving with you. No matter, even if you're in a perfect relationship, the teenage years are very difficult. So it's not because you are divorced, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Don't add that as another limiting belief to that you can't have a relationship or you can't make it work. Because even
for sure.
Yeah.
So did your daughter at the time, like, was she, I guess, like when you said that she was a little bit resistant in terms of like being, I guess, like what was her resistance to that? Like you being in, like bringing in another guy and not being happy, or what was her resistance?
She just didn't want to hang out with us.
Oh,
she did not want to hang out.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying now.
Yeah. He was living in Brampton and I was living in Toronto. What the heck's a 14-year-old, Toronto, Brampton for a 14-year-old, right? I mean, TTC, like she can jump on the bus and go anywhere she wanted to go. And I was dragging her to like the suburbs, right? To bond with this, my new boyfriend and his daughter. Like, that kind of sucks for a 14-year-old actually, right?
Yeah, no, I thought it was more or less, I thought it was a little bit deeper as in like, you know, I don't want mom to, you know, go out there and get hurt or whatever, what have you, and things like that. So I thought she was being a little bit more protective in terms of that. So
That might be a different dynamic for somebody who's always had two parents around. And that did actually come up on his side because he had the two parents. She had the two parents around all the time. So there was a point where, you know, they were transitioning to the every other weekend thing. And there was a point where she was questioning, like, you know, why can't it be like the way it was with you and mom there together?
Yeah, because I mean, I have some guys in my group and they have daughters around that age, like the 13, 14, 15. And you know, I hate always chalking it up to the fact that they're just this puberty and this is what they're going through. This is just the rebellion teen years. Obviously, that obviously has a lot to do with it, but I was just wondering if there was another dynamic that these teenagers go through, but you just mentioned it, so that's great. This is great perspective that we're giving for, you know, a lot of the men, even women that are listening into this, who think that, hey, they don't have a chance or at love or finding something new. Because I mean, when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to see that light at the end of the tunnel. You kind of almost want to victimize yourself. Sometimes people even, like, you know, turn to alcohol and drugs and just go down this real dark spiral, and just it ends up really being really bad for the kids and so on and so forth. So
I think too, though, when you have children, is to really, and again, it goes back to having fun, like really try to do, and you're trying to blend the two families or try to do family things that are fun, right? Like, you know, the simplest things, like going mini putting, or we went skiing and snowboarding, even cross-country skiing. So we did all of those things that you can't help but have fun. It doesn't matter who you're with, but you're gonna have fun eventually if you're just open to trying the activity. And that's really a way to bring families together, right? So it goes back to that of having fun.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love that. I think we forget, you know, we get so busy in our day-to-day to have fun, right? I think we think life is a struggle and that it's meant always to be in this low downward state. And I mean, I don't know. I've been loving life lately. I've been seeing things differently. It's just how you shift your mind into viewing things, I believe, is one of the keys to kind of getting out of, like, whatever dark spots that you're in, right?
It is. Well, this is the thing. And I think Canadians have it a little bit more difficult because the weather's so crappy a lot, right? But we forget that we need to get outside and we need that fresh air. And it's actually an effort. So you have to put that extra effort in to getting out there outside, doing something with the weather, doing something fun outside of your house. Or like you said, you just go, it's so easy to sit when it's snowing and cold outside, to sit with, you know, beer after beer in your hand and watch TV and zone out, right?
Yeah. way too for easy. Sure. I think that it is. And you know, I hate how Canadian life can get like that for a lot of people. And we use it as an excuse, and I get it. It gets cold out there if you want to hibernate, and it saves money and yada, yada, yada. But I mean, I think it just takes massive action to make something massively different in your life. If you want that relationship, you got to go out and get it. If you want to start that business, you really have to massively act on it and go and do something about it, or else you're just going to end up, you know. So love these perspectives that you're giving. So I really do appreciate, you know, you being vulnerable and being open and sharing a lot of that stuff that, you know, most people don't really talk about in their day-to-day lives, right? I find that relationships are so important to our happiness, and that it's something that we should pay more attention to. So can't thank you enough for giving us that perspective on your own life. And so what's going on with you right now? Are you, I know you're a realtor. Are you still doing that?
I still work with a lot of referrals. So yeah, if you want to refer anybody for real estate, I'm still that. I'm also a real estate investor, so I'm a landlord as well. So that will always be a part of my, I guess, pillar of income or wealth, I guess. I still believe in the power of real estate, but I'm actively growing my coaching business. I recently just did a coaching for real estate agents. I'm looking for small businesses and small business teams to work with, especially around group flow. Really, when you have a business and a team of people, it's really important that everybody jives and is in coherence with each other. Right, people forget that. People just hire people, not realizing that group training, group dynamics is just as important in building a sustainable and business, right, and happy business. right? Why do the business if it's going to bring you misery? So I'm really looking for more businesses to develop team flow as well. Individual coaching. As you can see, I have a variety of life experiences that I can help out with. I really love that. And the basis is always for me meditation, and even now, just even finding other ways to access the flow state, whether it's through movement, meditation, substances, and even sexuality. So there's all neat ways mm-hmm. of altering these, of getting altered states to really, as you said, rewire and interrupt old patterns.
So do you do like workshops, or are you doing mostly coaching online? How's that?
Yeah, so workshops, I get invited in to do talks as well. So yeah, if that's something that any of your people would be interested, give me a holla.
Cool, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're very relatable, obviously. There's so many things that you're well-versed in, like real estate, investing. I mean, we didn't even talk about the feng shui part. I know you like to do feng shui and
yeah, again, it's energy, right? It's energy and bringing more flow into your life, even though, it's bringing more flow, more balance, more harmony, and bringing outdoors in. I mentioned several times in my conversation, is being able to get outside, right? And in feng shui, it's all about bringing the outdoors in.
Yeah, love that. And we talked about a little bit about altered states before. We're talking a little bit about how we can use substances to get there, and you were saying how you wanted to try ayahuasca, and then we're talking about like microdosing mushrooms, and then we talked about LSD and things like that. So how do psychedelics help you get to that flow state, or what is the relationship between the psychedelics and having to reach that flow state or get to this altered state of reality?
When you understand that scientifically and historically, as an animal species, we are actually hardwired to want to have pattern interrupt. They're not quite sure as to whether it is a need for survival, but even as an animal species, I mean, animals are attracted to all kinds of drugs, right? There's that famous video with the dolphins and the fish, and the dolphins are literally getting high. So we are actually hardwired to pattern interrupt. And when this happens, and we've mentioned it so many times, is that we're able to rewire and have new activities in our brain and in our beings so that we can actually continue surviving and thriving. And the use of substances allows us, is another way of pattern interrupting. So I do this with a huge caveat that you have to be able to be very mature, and you also have to have a huge sense of self-awareness, because it's controlled substance for a reason. It's illegal for a reason.
Don't ask 16-year-old Rob to be that guy. I mean, you can ask 35-year-old Rob right now. He'll be like, yeah, okay, I'm mature enough. But 16-year-old Rob would be like, no, give me more. I want more. And then I would just pass out of stupidness.
Exactly. So there's
there's levels to it. And so that's what you're saying.
Yeah, there's a huge maturity required around it. And there's a purpose around it. I think that if you have a little bit more of intention with it, as opposed to just, let's just get high, dude. Like, it's not that way at all. And you know what, if you need that to have some extra fun, then so be it. Just stay safe, right? Stay safe. I think being able to use a substance consciously and with purpose and with maturity, just to be able to, again, shut down a certain portion of your brain that is not serving you in this moment, and hopefully access something greater and give you some sort of vision into something greater than yourself that you can carry forth with you in your regular being, is pretty amazing. And it can't always be, some people, I mean, I have gotten it just through meditation. And I've also gotten it through through substances. And it's not something, meditation I do daily because it's safe and it's easy and it's accessible. And obviously the substances I just can't, you know, you have to function, be able to function also during the day, and you have to sort of schedule it in to your time and your day. But as long as you do it with absolute maturity and consciousness and purpose, it can be, I mean, I recommend it, but I also recommend it with a huge caveat.
Yeah, no, I love that. And it's because, and I'm going to say something here too, is that some people can't get to those altered states, because what depression looks like in like the brain of a depressed somebody or whatever, there's chemicals that they're not able to produce inside of there. And so like some of these substances actually help their brain achieve that state because they're not normally allowed to get there. And that's why I think a lot of veterans use these psilocybin, which is the active ingredient inside of magic mushrooms, to help get them to an altered state where they're able to coherently see things that they're not able to see at a normal
state. Because of deep trauma, right? Because of deep trauma, it's exactly. Shut down some part of their brain that they can no longer access, say, joy, right? Peace anymore. So yes, it bypasses that. But then again, you also, knowing the science behind it and knowing that it is a temporary state, and again, if there's a codependency factor there, the addiction factor, it's, when it comes to psychedelics, there is little known.
There's no, I've heard LSD is not addictive at all, magic mushrooms, MDMA, all these drugs that people say, oh, they're so bad for you, propaganda, because somebody who does LSD is not going the next day and saying, hey, let's go do that again. They're more or less like, okay, you know, I got what I needed out of that. That was great. But I'm not looking to abuse it again the next day.
Yeah, that's how transformative it is. That's exactly how transformative.
Yeah, I find it funny when the government or whoever says that these drugs are going to ruin your life. No, I find that. I think Albert Einstein's even done LSD a few times, a handful of times. So, no, this is great. I feel like we could go like so many hours talking about this and, you know, talking about our own psychedelic trips. So, I don't know. Maybe you can document your ayahuasca thing. You said you wanted to go. I know I have a couple of friends who've done it already in the past. They've gone to, I think it's called Rhythmia. I think it's in Costa Rica, or
Costa Rica, Peru. Peru's the original, yes, one of the original places. Okay. Yeah, but
right,
I just
I don't know.
Yeah, like it's not for everybody. I don't recommend it for everybody. And then you have to have I always look at it like this. My daughter's father got into marijuana at the age of 21, and he was one of those, you know, let's just zone out and have a bag of potato chips in front of the TV. So again, it's really knowing how you react to something and knowing that you're not going to be able to function. And if you're one of those people, then don't do it, and don't do it often, because you need to get up and be as a contributing member to the society. We need more people like that. So if you know that certain substances make you react a certain way, take responsibility for that and then don't do it again. Right? So that's why.
just have fun one time and that's it, all right?
Yeah.
Don't abuse. No, I love that. Okay, so where are you hanging out usually? I want to wrap this up a little bit, but before I ask you the last question, I want people to get in touch with you as well. So where are you hanging out normally, and how can people get in touch with you, and we can talk to you all about like psychedelics, relationships, real estate, and like all these kinds of things that can connect with you. So where are you hanging out?
Facebook, you can always find me, Ivy Marie Lim, and Instagram, ivymariehomes.com. But sorry, not .com, but Ivy Marie Holmes is my handle on IG. So yeah, you can, and on YouTube, Ivy Marie Holmes on YouTube. So you just do a search on me and you'll find me. Google is good for that. I'm findable on Google.
Yes, I'm gonna put all that in the show notes as I'm writing it down here. I did also. She also interviewed me about, I think it was about a year ago, year and a half ago, on the divorced dad stuff. So you can go check out that video as well too. You have a so Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll put all that down. That's awesome. All right. So I ask this one question to all my guests at the end, and it's because a lot of people come find me at this part in their lives. As you know, either they're going through a divorce, or they're going through a separation, or they're going through some sort of heartbreak, something that's just traumatic, life-changing. They're sitting in this kind of place right now, and they don't know what to do. So you've obviously been there. We've also been there. I've also been there. We also have different ways to cope with certain things. But what's something that is that's universal to you that you could say to somebody who is going through this heartbreak and doesn't know how to get out of it?
I think it is, I know it's kind of trending now, but it is self-care. I really believe in food is thy medicine, and movement is also a medicine. I think that if you're eating well and moving well, things are a lot more palatable and a lot more manageable. So in the very least, and again, honor your grief, just don't stay down for too long. Force yourself to move and force yourself to eat properly, and all the mind and all the good stuff will come. But if you have those two things, you could get through anything.
Love it, love it, love it. Ivy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. And we'll have to talk more when we get into more of our experiences with other stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We'll definitely keep it. All right, thanks, Ivy.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye.